The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Teen Magazines. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from TeenVogue.com. Our first article today from TeenVogue.com. U.S. versus Scrimeti. Trans teens like L.W. just want to have a normal childhood. This article was written by Lex McMenamin on December 4th. And there is a note. Teen Vogue reports from the Supreme Court on the morning of a landmark case that could change access to gender-affirming care across the U.S. On a blustery December Wednesday in Washington, D.C., hundreds of protesters rallied outside the United States Supreme Court to advocate for trans rights. "I came out here to show my pride and support of all these other kids across the country," Maya Figueroa, 15, an advocate for trans youth who traveled from Arizona to D.C. with her mother, tells Teen Vogue. "The ban at the heart of the case being heard," she says, "shouldn't even be existing, yet it is. So we just have to show our support and keep on going." The case, United States versus Scrimeti, has united a wide swath of LGBTQ+ and youth advocacy groups, dozens of which were present outside the court. They see the case as part of a broader assault on the ability of trans people to use the correct pronouns and restrooms, participate in gendered sports leagues in alignment with their gender, and to safely, comfortably occupy public space. Slate describes Scrimeti as likely to be the most important trans rights case in the SCOTUS history, which will have knock-on effects for civil rights jurisprudence that will affect the freedoms and protections of LGBTQ+ Americans, women, medical providers, and parents' rights to raise their children without interference from the state. After the spring 2023 passage of Tennessee's Senate Bill 1, which banned youth gender-affirming care, the American Civil Liberties Union and Lambda Legal led the legal challenge to the state ban. The case began as L.W. versus Scrimeti, representing parents Samantha and Brian Williams and their trans teen daughter, known only as L.W., and other trans teens in Tennessee who were identified by pseudonyms. The titular Scrimeti is Jonathan Scrimeti, the state's attorney general. The Biden administration, backed by several civil rights organizations, has taken up the case before the conservative-dominated Supreme Court, arguing that the ban amounts to gender-based discrimination and a violation of the 14th Amendment's Equal Protection Clause, despite overwhelming scientific evidence that attests to the safety of hormone replacement therapy, HRT, to treat gender dysphoria. Meanwhile, according to reporting in The Guardian, the healthcare providers cited in Scrimeti's brief include those who have never treated trans youth and others affiliated with right-wing Christian groups. Tennessee is one of 26 U.S. states with some sort of ban in place on gender-affirming care for youth. Arizona, home to Figueroa and 17-year-old Daniel Trujillo, is another. "I should be at school right now," Trujillo tells Teen Vogue outside the Supreme Court. "I should be doing kid things. Instead, we're here fighting for our rights." Inside the court this morning were the ACLU's Chase Strangio, the lead attorney in this case, who today became the first known trans person to argue before SCOTUS, and 16-year-old L.W. In spring 2023, after the passage of Senate Bill 1, L.W.'s mother, Samantha, told the Washington Post she had filled out a form from the ACLU about the SB1's impact on LW's access to care, not knowing it would lead the family to the Supreme Court. Since Nashville's Vanderbilt University Gender Clinic stopped operating in June 2023, LW and Samantha have regularly traveled more than 5 hours one way to access LW's medical care in North Carolina. I first met the 16-year-old at the center of this case on Zoom. Speaking at 5 p.m. on a Friday, after a long week of media interviews for her, set up with a podcaster-level mic, joined by her mom, attorney, and the ACLU's Jillian Brandstetter, LW was exhausted, but clearly still 16. Though feeling drained, she snarked on the call as her new kitten, Mushroom, clambered over her head and shoulders. LW and her parents recall her adolescence pre-transition as being extremely difficult, especially with the onset of puberty. As described in the legal filing, LW developed urinary tract infections due to avoiding the school bathroom. A cousin of hers eventually transitioned, which inspired LW at age 12 to tell her parents of her suspicions that she was trans. The process of accessing gender-affirming care took months of discussions and meetings with doctors before LW started puberty blockers and, later, estrogen. Social and emotional struggles defined LW's childhood, but since transitioning, she says, her life has become full, including AP classes, hobbies, video games, and DJ sets. She tells me proudly that she was producing a song throughout our Zoom call. It is this normalcy that anti-trans youth bans damage. I always paid attention to politics because I had the fear and understanding that it would affect me in the future, and I still do, LW says. Of course, even more so because it is affecting me. In order to travel for HRT, she's been forced to leave school for whole days, which puts her behind on schoolwork. It's a very terrifying thought that I could have to go off this medical care because my dysphoria was horrible before I started. I was really isolated because of it, which tended to hurt my mental health, she explains. Obviously, you're not yourself. It's real-life body horror, essentially. Body horror is a genre of horror that's particularly terrifying because it's about the lack of autonomy over your own body. LW tries not to think too much about the fact that she's part of such a consequential moment in trans history, but there are aspects that nag at her. It's upsetting that a lot of my medical records had to be sent to the opposing side really early on. That's definitely something I am not very happy about, she says. My medical records are a pretty personal thing. This is only one aspect of the invasion into the lives and homes of families with trans children that is attempting to tear them apart. The amici briefs filed in support of LW's case are full of similarly heart-wrenching stories. One family split time between Texas and Oregon after the May 2023 passage of Texas's ban on youth gender-affirming care. Another family was forced to spend $10,000 to relocate from North Carolina to Michigan just to be put on a 10-month waiting list for their child care. Given bans on gender-affirming medical care all over the country, many people are traveling out of state to access the care they need, and care in Michigan is bottlenecked as a result, a brief reads. Another child was forced to graduate early from her Missouri high school to attend college at 17 in Minnesota, where she could maintain access to her health care. To call these scenarios options is a generous reading. relocating hasn't been a possibility for LW and her family because it would uproot the family from her brother's social universe and separate her father from his aging parents. LW is unique among the tens of thousands of trans kids diagnosed with gender dysphoria in the last few years because they won't all become named plaintiffs in a Supreme Court case. But the stakes for them are equally as stark, and the possible consequences just as dire. This case is deeply consequential for a population that is facing a hostile Trump administration, a weak and waffling Democratic Party, and a continued barrage of bills and policies targeting trans life. In the 2024 presidential election, the GOP spent some $200 million on anti-trans ads, while the Democrats spent about a ninth of that on ads in response. I would see these ads all over the place about Kamala's for they-them. 20-year-old Malika St. Laurent, who is non-binary, tells Teen Vogue. But nobody in the Democratic Party said, hey, that's okay. In the wake of the election, St. Laurent is working on getting their passport renewed, as are countless other trans people nationwide. Representative Seth Moulton, Democrat, Massachusetts, echoing the rhetoric of MSNBC's Morning Joe, wrote yet another Just Asking Questions op-ed about trans girls in sports for the Washington Post. In 2022, the ACLU's Strangio, the lead attorney in this case, argued that there is a direct line from the discourse to these policies. 2 years later, what was clear then has become only more so. In the past few weeks, 24 state attorneys general asked SCOTUS to step in and ban trans girls' participation in youth sports. Much like bans on trans youth health care, an emphasis on trans youth in sports is part of an effort to target gender nonconforming girls and women in sports writ large. A quick Google search of Blair Fleming, the 22-year-old San Jose State women's volleyball player, is full of conservative coverage that misgenders her and cis teammates complaining about her to the press. The young woman's participation on her college sports team somehow even merited commentary from Donald Trump on the campaign trail. This transphobic political climate has dire consequences for trans youth, whether they've been advocating for themselves publicly for years or forcibly politicized just by living as trans people, regardless of their age. St. Laurent lived with another trans student during their freshman year of college at a school where they suspect they were maybe a handful of trans students among a student body of thousands. Their roommate died by suicide that year, leading St. Laurent to drop out. 19-year-old Dylan Brandt, who spent his teen years fighting a trans health care ban in his native Arkansas, transitioned at age 13. These days, generally, people don't know he's trans in his day-to-day life. But with the threat of bathroom bans, he tells Teen Vogue, that normalcy would be ruptured. I would look pretty weird walking into a women's restroom, Brandt says dryly. If I was forced to choose between getting charged with sexual indecency against a minor, if I went into a men's bathroom and there happened to be a minor in there, or I walk into a women's bathroom behind a guy's daughter and he's standing outside of the bathroom waiting for her, he's not going to wait for an explanation for me before he pulls me out of that bathroom and goes ham on me. Alexis Rose Hinckley, a registered nurse specializing in youth gender-affirming care, who is also a popular TikTok commentator, is cis and has trans loved ones, including several trans youth she's cared for over the years. It's wild to me that they have become this political scapegoat when they're literally just trying to get through effing high school. Rose, also in D.C. for the oral argument and rally, tells Teen Vogue a few days prior. There is plenty of research to back up the concrete benefits appropriate medical care has for trans youth who need it. In an amicus brief jointly filed by the Trevor Project, the Juvenile Law Center, and the National Center for Youth Law, it is noted, a peer-reviewed study of 11,914 transgender or non-binary youth found that gender-affirming hormone therapy is associated with nearly 40% lower odds of recent depression and attempting suicide in the past year for transgender or non-binary participants between the ages of 13 and 17. Qualitative data collected by the Trevor Project further underscores these studies' findings. Access to puberty-delaying medications and hormone therapy is key to transgender youth's well-being and positive self-concept. Scientific studies have also documented the converse. The delay or denial of such medical care is correlated with negative mental health effects on transgender youth. For the past few years, Rose has worked at an LGBTQ+ summer camp that has been doxxed, resulting in lockdowns, which is eerily reminiscent of the threats of mass shootings at spaces for LGBTQ+ adults. Last year was the first year, she says, that the camp had campers from Tennessee who were forced to detransition after the state's ban. We've gotten letters from parents about how talking about camp and planning for camp was the only thing that kept their kids alive, Rose tells Teen Vogue. Trans health care is suicide prevention at its core. These politicians have never had to sit with these kids and talk them through, hey, what are you feeling right now? Do you need me to call someone? Do we need to go somewhere? Like, how do we keep you safe? The fact that it's people who have never even had a conversation with these kids are making these statements for them, for their families, for their medical providers, is asinine. This statement is echoed to Teen Vogue by parents of trans youth, such as Daniel Trujillo's mother, Lizette, a fierce advocate for trans youth, who says she felt nervous outside the Supreme Court. To do something proactive, to protect our children is what's keeping me going, she explains. It's scary to think that next summer we could have an unfavorable ruling. Then I have to keep reminding myself that we will take care of each other, we'll be in community, and do the things that we need to do, because our children are not going to stop being transgender just because you strip them of their care. Lizette continues, stripping them of their care is cruel, but they will continue to be who they are, and parents like myself will continue to do what we need to do to protect them and keep them safe and alive. Our next article from TeenVogue.com. Rachel Zegler walks back comments about Trump supporters. This article was written by Ashley Carter on November 16th. Rachel Zegler has apologized for her frustrated comments about Donald Trump and his supporters following the election after drawing ire from political commentators and Trump backers. The actor shared a statement on Instagram on Friday, November 15th, apologizing for her lengthy election post she made the previous week. I let my emotions get the best of me. Hatred and anger have caused us to move further and further away from peace and understanding, and I am sorry I contributed to the negative discourse, Zegler wrote. I firmly believe that everyone has the right to their own opinion, even when it differs from my own. The Snow White star shared a series of impassioned paragraphs on Instagram the Wednesday after the election, when Trump was officially voted the president-elect for the second time. In between acts of Romeo and Juliet on Broadway, Zegler wrote that she was speechless about another 4 years of hatred and living in a world I do not want to live in. She then echoed musician Ethel Cain's past statement, writing, "May Trump supporters and Trump voters and Trump himself never know peace." It is terrifying the number of people who stand behind what this man preaches, she continued. It is a foolish subscription to a false sense of security, of masculinity, of intelligence, of patriotism, and of humanity. On Zegler's final Instagram slide, she said she was about to go back on stage for the second act of her play, but before she went, she said she was sending love to everyone who needs it today. "I will love through these 4 years as best as I can," Zegler continued. F. Donald Trump. While many people expressed their disappointment with the election results, Zegler was targeted by Trump supporters, including political commentator Megyn Kelly, who called on Disney to reshoot Snow White after her comments. "Rachel Zegler is a pig, and you fired Gina Carano for far less than this nonsense," Kelly said, referencing the Mandalorian star, who was let go from the show in 2021 after Lucasfilm said her social media posts denigrating people based on their cultural and religious identities are abhorrent and unacceptable. Carano, an ardent Trump supporter, shared multiple social media posts mocking the use of masks during the pandemic and making fun of pronouns. The actor sued Disney and Lucasfilm earlier this year, with the help of X, for wrongful termination. Our next article from TeenVogue.com. Demi Lovato is excited to plan her wedding. This article was written by Danielle Quateng on November 25th. A wedding is on Demi Lovato's horizon. At Teen Vogue Summit, the singer shared that she's in full planning mode for her upcoming nuptials to fiancé Jordan Jutes Lutz, and is loving the process. "It's going really good," she told Teen Vogue's editor-in-chief, Varsha Sharma, about the wedding. "It's coming together, and I'm really excited about it. I'm a little stressed because there are so many things that you have to plan that I had no idea about. But every detail you have to make a decision on, and so it's a little overwhelming, but I'm having the best time doing it, and I cannot wait to get married to him." Both musicians, Lovato has referred to Jutes as her best friend and soulmate, who is very supportive. The couple began dating in 2022 after writing a song together. They share a dog, Pickle, together. And in December 2023, they became engaged. In her recent Teen Vogue cover story, she revealed that the big day will take place in 2025, and it's something she's been dreaming about since she was a kid. "You know, I've waited my whole life for him," Lovato told People in September 2024. "It's very grounding to have a partner that is so supportive, so loving, so caring. It's very easy to stay centered with him because I love him so much and he treats me so amazing." In addition to wedding planning, the star shared with the crowd at Summit that she's working on new music and other creative expressions. This fall, Lovato made her directorial debut with the documentary Child Star, which chronicled the complicated trials of growing up in front of the camera. "I would describe the era of my career today as the whatever makes me happy era," Lovato said. "I'm making music that makes me happy. I'm cooking in the kitchen, posting those videos to TikTok. I directed the documentary I just did. I've spent so many years doing what other people expected of me, but not doing it for myself." Now she is, with so much joy. Our next article from TeenVogue.com. Barry Keoghan responds to disgusting messages he's received. This article was written by Ashley Carter on December 8th. Barry Keoghan explained that he deactivated his Instagram account due to hateful messages and comments he's received following his breakup from Sabrina Carpenter. The Saltburn actor shared a statement on X on Saturday, December 7th, urging people to be more respectful of him and his family, and why he decided to take down his Instagram account. "I can only sit and take so much," Keoghan said. "My name is being dragged across the internet in ways I usually don't respond to." Keoghan wrote that he had to make a statement because there are too many lines being crossed, and that he deleted Instagram because he can no longer let this stuff distract from my family and my work. "Absolute lies, hatred, disgusting commentary about my appearance, character, how I am as a parent, and every other inhumane thing you can imagine," he continued. "Dragging my character and everything I worked extremely hard for and stand for." Keoghan said that people have been knocking at my granny's door and sitting outside his ex Allison Sandro and 2-year-old son Brando's house, intimidating them. "Each and every day I work harder to push myself on every level to be the healthiest and strongest person for that boy," he continued. "I want you to remember that he has to read all of this about his father when he is older. Please be respectful to all." Speculation about the state of Barry Keoghan's relationship with Sabrina Carpenter began to ramp up in recent weeks, and on December 3rd, a source confirmed to People that the pair had decided to take a break after a year together. A rumor also started from gossip site Dumois that Keoghan had allegedly cheated with a TikTok influencer, but a source told People that those rumors were false and that Keoghan was always very faithful to her from the start. We've run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazines. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Teen Magazines is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. We thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.